steps to the mic with a boom ping ping. Wisdom sharper than a bee's fierce sting. Words like fireflies that light the night. He turns the dark into blazing bright. Boom ping ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom ping ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, all the airwaves king. The ground unveils the truth where lies abound. Politics, justice, social streams. He molds the chaos into dreams. No silence here, just the sound of change. Boom, ping, ping, rearrange ya. Boom, ping, ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom, ping, ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king or the airwaves king. Through the static, through the noise, he amplifies the people's voice. Boom, ping, ping, like a heartbeat's call. He's got the wisdom to break down walls. Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday, July 29th, 2026. Yes, of course, we are going to talk about what was billed as a Democratic candidate debate last night. However, upon closer inspection, I do not believe that that was a candidate debate, because a debate allows the candidates to challenge one another, to turn toward one another, and to point out inconsistencies in the other candidates' records. There was none of that. This was a candidate forum in which most of those folks on that stage, including State Senator Kel DeRoyce, businessman Joel Brennan, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, Wisconsin State Assembly Representative Francesca Hong, and former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, were auditioning for the voters and hoping to win over and move and sway some 40%+ of undecided folks. I don't know if that was accomplished. We're going to talk about the candidate forum in a little bit more detail shortly. We do have a YouTube poll question up, and it's not a complicated question. It's a simple yes or no. Don't want you to think too hard. Don't want you to expend too many brain cells on the YouTube question. Do you believe that there was a clear winner in last night's candidate forum? I am not going to call it a debate because there was very little debating. In fact, the only shots that were fired were Mandela firing shots at David Crowley, which I found petty. Too little, too late, last ditch, very small of the former lieutenant governor, including a photograph that was posted from an official, maybe unofficial, Mandela Barnes campaign account. But to refer to David Crowley as being a part of this quote-unquote establishment, and the establishment is trying to tip the scales in this election, the establishment is trying to have undue influence in this election, is hypocritical, because at one point in time, Mandela Barnes loved, loved that establishment, and he ran for lieutenant governor in 2018 as a part of that establishment, and he ran for the U.S. Senate in 2022 as a part of that establishment. So let's not use that term as a negative when it once was the wave that you rode on into Wisconsin politics. I'm not necessarily a fan of that term or the way it is currently being used, because I do think there need to be some solid foundational bedrock policies that are easy to understand and easy to communicate. If you're going to vote for a Democrat or if you're going to vote for a Republican, don't you want an established policy platform? Don't you want to have a set of expectations from those folks you were putting in executive or legislative leadership? So they're taking the term establishment. This is what I believe, because African Americans up until recently have been the foundation and the establishment of the Democratic Party. And I don't see that as a bad thing, because if you look at some of the things that African Americans marched, fought, organized, and voted for, it is to establish a much more fair, equitable United States of America. So if that's the establishment, then I too am a part of it. I'm a member of the media. The media is so establishment. It's the only industry that is enshrined in the Constitution. Literally the only industry that is protected by the Constitution itself. The establishment is not bad, but what they're trying to do, and I'm noticing it this cycle, and I've been trying to communicate it to all of you every single day. This is an anti-African American, anti-affirmative action, anti-DEI political climate. So if you can relegate the contributions of African Americans to Democratic wins, including the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, which now has a liberal majority, if you relegate us to the establishment, now all of a sudden we and our sentiments are no longer welcome in a much more left-leaning, progressive Democratic Party. This is Francesca Hong's party. Like it or not, it is hers. No one attacked her. No one went after her. She was completely unscathed. Now, the bar was very low for her. All she had to do was get through the debate and not make any screw-ups. And I think that she was doing something within the debate that most people didn't account for. When she was asked if she agreed with some of the platform items of the National Democratic Socialists of America, she said no, because they want to, like, get rid of the U.S. Senate, and they really do want to abolish the police. And she disavowed herself from them. But also should be noted, National DSA is not supporting nor endorsing her, or at least not yet. By her disavowing some of the more extreme positions of the DSA, she immediately, right before our eyes, moved back toward the middle. And she was running against Tom Tiffany, because I don't know if she needs to be concerned about the other Democrats on the stage. I do. I'm going to get into more detail. I'm already getting into the detail. I'm troubled that they have taken this word establishment and it's turned anti-black. Just like woke, they changed the definition of woke. Woke is our word. Woke is what black people would tell to other black people. If you're going to be driving from the deep south through the deep south and maybe to all points north or west or east, stay woke, because you might be driving through sundown towns. Stay woke. Keep your head on a swivel. Be vigilant. There are certain places you can't go, certain gas stations you can't stop at. Stay woke. Woke was a term that we used amongst one another so that we stayed vigilant. And then, of course, the right came and they commandeered woke. Before the right commandeered woke and made it a slur, the left was calling each other woke. They were trying to outwoke each other. You know how hypocritical it is when white folks try to outwoke one another when woke is our word? But just look how the definition of woke changed. It started as something that was out of care, out of caution for other African Americans driving through and passing through the Jim Crow South. You got to stay woke. These people are not nice. They're not friendly. There's some towns that you have to be out of by sundown. You have to stay woke. Then the left took it and they tried to outwoke each other. Who can be more progressive than the other person? Then, of course, the right chomping at the bit. They took it and turned it into a slur. Now you have to be anti-woke. Anti-woke, in effect, is now anti-black. Think about it. Establishment. establishment now has become, oh, you don't want to be a part of the establishment. They are all running for public office in which there are established rules and paperwork and campaign finance laws. All of that is establishment. So what are you going to do? Get elected to governor and start a revolution? Oh, I'm so just frustrated. So a YouTube question. Not that it even matters, because here's what I found in sifting through the commentary, especially on Twitter. Oh, everybody's an expert on Twitter. It's so good. It's so good and so bad at the same time. Everybody is an expert. The candidate of your choice is who you thought won the debate, because it wasn't a debate. It was the candidates that you already are probably familiar with, the ones that you have been following more closely than others. And if you listen to talk radio, you probably already had a preferred candidate. Like, I don't believe the people that actually pay attention to media every single day, or at least pay attention to media frequently, are still in the 45% undecided, which, and I don't even think the undecided number is that high. If it is that high, that's dangerous, because a portion of the undecided, if you're undecided less than 2 weeks before the actual election, when 108,000 mail-in votes have already been cast, FYI, the majority of those have come from Milwaukee and Madison. And if you're still undecided, you're probably not going to vote, or at least not going to vote in this election, because who is undecided in a midterm election where Donald Trump is president and apparently there's an affordability crisis, which everybody is talking about? I guess it's been going on for a while. When Donald Trump was running for re-election, he was talking about the price of eggs. Eggs were so, I don't even know if people are even buying eggs anymore. So to be undecided means you are either disinterested, or the other D word, you are disappointed. So here's what we're going to do. I guess I kind of previewed the debate a little bit. I got some articles I'm going to reference, but it's mostly whoever you liked before the conversation, the forum last night, you probably still like them, and you probably also think that your preferred candidate did well. I have my preferences on who I think beat expectations. I think Kelda did okay. Kelda was consistent with what she said when she called us yesterday. Kelda got a script. It's tattooed on the inside of her eyelids. She stays on the script. I think Joel Brennan sounded like an executive. I don't know if that's going to be enough. David Crowley sounded like the Milwaukee County executive. He sounded like a good county executive. I don't know if he was able to make a case in which he would, because he had to triple his support in the polls. I don't know if that performance tripled his support in the polls. Are you guys familiar with a restaurant called McDonald's? I'm sure you are. Every McDonald's you go to, the food is exactly the same. The McDouble is the same. The McChicken is the same. Now, there might be a slight variation in the care in which your sandwiches are assembled, but it tastes the same. You know, McDonald's, like all of the food, whether it be breakfast or any kind of a sandwich, it has like a general, like, McDonald's flavor to it. But if you go to other restaurants, if you go to Burger King, if you go to Wendy's, McDonald's has its own kind of unique just flavor. Maybe it's the way they salt their food or season their food, but their burgers and their sandwiches have just a unique McDonald's flavor. McDonald's, no matter which one you go into, it could be one in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, or Louisville, Kentucky. You might even be at a McDonald's in Boston, Massachusetts, or Sacramento, California. They smell the same, right? No matter what the issues of the day are, no matter what the election is, Mandela Barnes just seems like the McDonald's. No matter what the issues are, he just gives the same kind of very familiar, almost comfortable kinds of answers. So I don't know if he differentiated himself between his positions and the other candidates. So why don't we do this? Because I say I'm going to take a break, and that's when I start talking all over again. Let's take a break, come back, and I want to change the narrative a little bit about something that I think troubles me. And talk radio is a place in which we can change old narratives and begin to explore new ones. I think that African Americans are hampered by an old, tired, and I'm going to prove to you today, false narrative that all black folks struggled and are poor. And to be authentic, you have to come from the 532 something something zip code. And you had to struggle all your life. We got to stop that. Do you guys know that all black people aren't poor? Can we begin with that premise? Because for some reason, whenever we get on a stage or whenever we have a fantastic opportunity in front of us, we always highlight how homeless, how poor, how many evictions, how many absent fathers. That's not, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know, and I'm going to prove it to you because I know some of y'all are going to need some convincing, especially those of you who have less melanin, because you truly believe that all black people are just struggling. We're just one step out of slavery. Like every black person, you guys think, wakes up in the morning, oh, Lord, I guess I'm going on down to the watermelon patch. Oh, Lord, my back shoulder is hurting. That all black people are just humming slave hymns. Not true. I don't even know any slave hymns. Okay, well, kind of. I know a couple, but not many. I know more Jay-Z songs than slave hymns. By the way, why did David Crowley quote Beyonce last night? Did you hear that, Xavier, when he said,
yes, I did.
Oh, the Beyonce.
The Beyonce plan.
Somebody, like, his consultants told, they've been steering him wrong the whole time. I really got to take a break now. You need to be a better producer and
I let you riff. I mean, what do you mean? You have a 2-minute thing in the beginning of the show. You know, you get yourself a little extra first segment, you know?
I don't want to blow my wad in the first segment, though.
But you're not going to.
I got a lot of wad left.
Yeah, you're pacing yourself. You're just edging it.
Have you? Have we figured out what's playing over the radio? Are we good? Or is... I got a text message saying that something from May 1st is playing.
I checked the YouTube. Sounds like today's show. I don't know what they're talking about.
Fair enough. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on today, Wednesday, July 29th, 2026 at 11 a.m. Another Marquette University Law School poll is set to be released. And when it is released, we will bring it to you live and in real time. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
It should be noted that since 1990, which was 36 years ago, the African American poverty rate has effectively cut itself in half. Is it higher than other racial and ethnic groups? It is. But is it lower than it was? Also, it is. The current rate of poverty for the years in which we have the most recent data, which is the year 2024, because a lot of the federal agencies that are designed to collect demographic data and tell the American people how we as Americans are doing economically, a lot of that has been disbanded by DOGE and Donald Trump. The EEOC has been disbanded or reassigned. The Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice has all been reassigned, mostly to immigration enforcement. So the credible statistics that we have, even the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is supposed to be a nonpartisan organization that tells the American people where the labor market was, where it is, and where it is going, those have all been essentially upended by political appointees of Donald Trump. So we can't get honest, factual, statistical, detailed information coming out of this administration. So we have to use Biden administration statistics, and I am okay with that because that was a presidential administration, whether you liked him or not, that actually believed in science. And, you know, science, it helps with a lot of stuff. So the years in which we have credible data from 2024 released in the fall of 2025, the African-American poverty rate stands at 17.9%. I'm going to round that up to 18%. That means that 82% of African Americans do not live in poverty. Do not. Now, there's some leeway just above the poverty line. Depends on where you live. Depends on the makeup of your legislature, of your state. Depends on the makeup and the political ethos of the city council in the municipality in which you are a resident. You can be above the poverty line and still qualify for certain benefits. Maybe you can get energy assistance. If you're 100% or 50% above the poverty line, you still can qualify for some benefits. But technically, by the standard federal definition, the overwhelming 8 in 10 black people don't live in poverty. But for some reason, we give credence and credibility to the black people who are in the ultra minority of the minority. And I want to change that narrative because you have the world thinking that black people are just all overwhelmingly poor. And even when we have people accomplishing great things, doesn't their narrative always start with, we grew up poor? Oh, Lord, I didn't know where my meals was coming from. That doesn't represent 80% of our community, yet for some reason we put credibility and stock into those people, and I find it problematic because it feeds into a stereotype, and we are still trying to push back and reject the stereotypes that black people don't work and don't have money and are lazy and are shiftless. 82% of black people are not poor. The opening remark from the county executive last night, I think that at some point he was accused of being establishment, and he said he had it was a one-liner that was written because they got the debate questions ahead of time, you can tell, which I don't necessarily like that. I want, if I'm watching people that are going to be representing us, especially in the executive branch, I want to see their wits. How do you think on your feet? Because if you're doing battle with a hostile legislature, and if you're doing battle with the Trump administration, because the governor of Wisconsin, even if it is a Republican, is still going to have some friction and some tension with the federal government, which is led by Donald Trump, I want to know that you can think on your feet. And so when you give the candidates all of the questions and the subject matter ahead of time, then they get to write like little cutesy, ooh, I'm going to say this, I'm going to sneak in the Beyonce line, which missed completely. But David tried to distance himself from being in the establishment, which I don't think that he should do that because other people have changed the definition of establishment to mean something negative. He said, I didn't grow up in the establishment. I grew up in the struggle. Why do we have to lead with that? I can't be the only one that thinks this way. Every time a black politician or a black person who accomplishes something or does something, I came from the 53206. Look, we get it. There's a lot of people in 53206 that went to jail, but it doesn't mean that every single person, there's got to be tens of thousands of people that live in that zip code. Every single person in that zip code is not a thug and a criminal and a felon. So we lead with our poverty and how broken our homes were, and that does not represent African Americans. The number of people living in poverty in the year in which we have the most recent data, 35.9 million national poverty rate, is 10.6%. So 89.4% of people in America can clearly afford eggs. They are not living in poverty. Now, that doesn't mean this stuff isn't expensive. That doesn't mean that affordability isn't a real thing. The people that buy the gasoline, your gasoline prices are probably going up. And I don't know, your athletic shoes that you purchased or your socks or your underwear, or some of you wear Michael Jackson gloves. I don't know what the hell you wear. Maybe those things have gotten more expensive, but that doesn't mean that you live in poverty. Poverty shouldn't be vaunted. Like, I'm authentic because I grew up eating dirt. Where did that come from? That narrative, because does it mean like, oh, you're tough because you grew up in poverty and started from the bottom, now you're here? Maybe is that what it is? I think that that narrative needs to be totally and completely retired. And I say that because I do a lot of comparisons. And I know I don't want to compare us to the whites, because the whites. Ay, ay, ay. Even though that's something a Mexican would say. The whites are, in fact, the gift to keep on giving. For a master race, they're not doing very well at being masterful, but whatever. When a white person, I don't know, runs for office or something, or does something big, wins a championship, do they begin their speech with, I came from the trailers. I came from not having indoor plumbing. I came from a, because you got to be even more destitute than coming from a single parent household. Because for some reason, I don't think a single parent, because single parent households are actually pretty common. And oh, by the way, the majority of single mothers in this country actually are white women. Oh, you don't have to believe me. Go look it up. So you have to actually be worse off. I came from a no parent household. They don't say that. In fact, they don't use their past, however checkered, to give credibility to where they are currently. And I don't know, maybe it's just something that black people do to show like how tough we are and how hard we can fight. Or maybe we use that to show that we're not a part of the establishment. I wish that we would use, if you're going to use a negative definition of the establishment, because you know what the establishment in America really is? You know what's really established, what's tried and true and consistent and has been here as a foundation even before America was a country? Because America didn't become a country until 250 years ago. Before that, it was just a bunch of states that acted as their own independent countries. The whole idea of the United States was not anything the states even wanted to do. They were content being their own countries, and also would reserve the right to go to war with one another. But the founders were like, nah, let's try and get this damn thing together and put everybody under one roof so we, the federal government, can tax everybody. That's a whole other set of issues. Racism. Institutional and structural racism in everything. In education, which came up a lot last night, in health, the distribution of healthcare resources. We see it's everywhere. That is the establishment. The established order is, I'm going to prevent you, or I'm going to judge you, or I'm going to make your life a little bit more difficult, or I'm going to find out where you live as far as if you're a minority. I'm going to make sure that you get less. I'm going to make you have to struggle a little bit more. Even with that, black people still find a way to excel, because I also know that we realize that racism as an institution and as an establishment, the real establishment in America, is based on ignorance. And if you just outthink racism a little bit, you can fool a racist person. Because we can live in a gray area in which they cannot see, because a racist person usually sees things, pun intended, as black and white. They don't have any capacity to understand nuance, because a lot of them are just dumb. But the real establishment in this nation, what has been foundational, is that we judge people based on sometimes their ethnicity, their country of origin, even their religion. There was a point in time where America didn't want to elect a Catholic president. We didn't have a Catholic president until 1960. And when I think about that, who cares? Catholics are—they're a little weird, a little tiny bit. They're little bit, not like Seventh Day Adventist weird. Not, you know, I mean, they don't like cut the heads off of chickens or nothing like that. Not the Seventh Day Adventist. Somebody cuts off chicken heads and does. Who is the religion that does the snakes?
Santeria.
What's Santeria?
Oh, I thought you were talking about cutting off the chickens and stuff like
but
that?
But no, it's a
Santeria. I mean, I don't know the origins of it. I know it's like from the a mix of African heritage.
Isn't that voodoo?
Stuff. Yeah, voodoo stuff. And okay. then, like, you know.
But it's other evangelical white Southern Christian religions where they got
snakes. the snake people. I know what you're talking about. I don't know the names.
Well, Catholic. I'm just saying Catholics aren't that weird.
Yeah. I don't know. The priests are pretty weird.
Yeah, some of them are. Some of them can't get married.
Well, it's not an excuse for what they do.
It's not all of them. It's not all of them, but it's always them. All right, let's take a break. Come back. Stop promoting the narrative that black people are poor. They're not. The majority of black people have a lot of money. I mean, we don't know what the hell to do with it. We're not poor. I started at the bottom. I was born in this world with no parents. Because you have to outpour somebody else to get more credibility. I don't even know who my mother is. I was born and I was on the streets as an infant. And I had to kill for Similac as a baby. And I taught myself how to walk. And look at me now. I'm running for president and I started with nothing. I had to sell crack in kindergarten. Stop it! Stop trying to outsad one another to build credibility. I want somebody to say, yeah, I grew up with both my parents. I went to college. We had delicious meals. We went to Red Lobster 2 days a week. We weren't poor. I drove a Chevrolet when I was 16 years old. I got a car in high school. I was very happy and content. I went to the mall and I bought athletic shoes and athletic gear. Because I didn't grow up poor and I'm black. I know how to read. I go to the library for fun. I do research and I go mountain biking. I'm black and I'm a world traveler with a passport. Why can't we ever begin with that narrative? Why it's got to be, I grew up with nothing. I grew up, I didn't even have any elbows. I had to grow some elbows when I was 14. Let's change the narrative, okay? The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Wisconsin Democratic gubernatorial candidates faced off in the only, quote, debate before the primary. Personally, I don't believe it was a debate. I believe it was a candidate forum in which the individuals who were running to be the Democratic nominee tried and failed to differentiate themselves from one another. I think they also compared themselves to Francesca Hong, which basically solidified her as the front runner. I am not convinced, and I'm going to stand on this, and I'm going to continue to repeat it through November 3rd, that a non-Democrat third-party candidate that happens to get the Democratic nomination, because remember, Democratic primary voters are very different. They're a small subset of the overall electorate. They are not the majority. I don't believe that a third-party candidate can beat someone who is, even if the other of the majority party candidate, there's two majority parties, Democrat and Republican, okay? Even if the Republicans are not doing very well and if Donald Trump is not polling very well, I think it is a higher hill to climb for a third-party candidate to beat any one of the two main political parties, because you're going to have to convince people that absolutely are Democrats or issue voters to vote for a third party. Third parties have tried, and sometimes they have really good ideas, but a lot of times their ideas are generally absorbed within the other political party. MAGA, Republicans absorb MAGA. Democrats usually absorb leftists, revolutionaries, progressives, centrists, moderates. blah, 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 the big tent. But when you have a faction of what would be very liberal Democrats identify as something that is not a Democrat, a Democratic Socialist, I think that that is tougher in a general election, because general election voters in Wisconsin, a red state, Wisconsin is a red state, don't fool yourself. Donald Trump won this state in 2016 and he won it in 2024. It was only a blue state in one of those last three elections. And I think it's tough for a state that is, that has been trending red. We had a Republican governor for two terms in Scott Walker. Now we balance that out with a Democratic governor in Tony Evers for two terms. But I think it's going to be really, really, really tough, because the Democratic coalition, which has failed, I think, since Obama. They've been trying to rebuild the Obama coalition since 2012, and they can't do it. We don't even know what happened. We don't know where those people are at. They don't exist anymore. It was a combination of a variety of different social and economic factors that built the Obama coalition. That coalition is gone. And I don't think it's ever going to come back. Democrats are too busy living in the past. That's unfortunate. And I don't know if the future of the Democratic Party is for it to disband itself and become the Democratic Socialist Party. But right now, the party is broken. Literally, the DNC, who we would like to come in and help, they're broke. They ain't got no money. The DNC has $2.2 million in debt. They had to mortgage their building to get a loan to pay some of their debts, opposed to the Republican National Committee that has 130. Well, as of Monday of this week, the Republican National Committee had $130 million. They probably got more than that now. They're flush with cash. Not to mention, Donald Trump's super PAC has $400 million. Now, Democratic candidates, especially those running for the U.S. Senate, in various states around the country, they are raising great money. Jonathan Ossoff has got about $42 million. He can spend about $500,000 a day until the election. Jonathan Ossoff in Georgia, he's doing okay. James Tallarico in Texas, who some of y'all don't like because he beat Jasmine Crockett, he's got about $70, $72 million. So he is doing very well on his own. But they are not going to be able to get any additional support from the Democratic National Committee because the committee is broke. Let's talk to somebody else who's probably broke, one of those blacks in poverty. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hello, Sharon. You know, I just can't believe it's 8 out of 2 blacks that got money. I mean, the poll.
Not got money, just aren't living in poverty. Difference.
Well, I called C-SPAN today.
Why?
It's one thing.
Why would you do that?
Huh?
Why would you call C-SPAN? For what?
Because they brought up a topic that aggravated me, and I had to let them have it. But, you know, I scratched my head when I'm going to vote for the man that you suggest, Brennan. However, I thought about if Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson lived in Milwaukee, and they had to vote for the governor, they go with them two black guys, whether they win or lose. You know, that's why I'm scratching my head, but I'm going to vote for this guy, you know, this white guy, but see, just scratching my head.
Bob, I don't feel comfortable you saying you're going to vote for my guy. First of all,
yeah.
It's much more. I want you to think on your own. If you want to vote for the black candidates, Bob, please do that. Be like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, which I think are not necessarily people. Well, one of them is dead. I don't know if that mode of thinking, their 20th century view of black people in the black community and civil rights, I think it's kind of outdated. But if that is who you follow because they were influential to you when you were coming up, then vote how they would vote. Me and you clearly are not the same. I got different calculus that goes into how I make my political decisions. So I don't want you to just listen to me. Vote how you feel like voting.
No, I'm voting for who you vote for because I don't know enough about them people. And I called C-SPAN today for the fact that here's how you end the war.
Oh, good God. Bob, please tell me you didn't. Yes, I do mind, actually. You called C-SPAN and you said on the air how we should end the war?
Yes, because they aggravated me. Yeah. How you end the war is the head of the Senate and the head of the Congress say they will vote 2/3 not to never blow you up and pay the money that this president, this idiot, blew up your country. In return, we hope you will not get a nuclear weapon and open up the sea of without us paying. And that's the beginning of the negotiation. And we're going to have 2/3 vote to make sure Trump ain't got nothing to do with it. We override him, even if we have to, negotiation goes to, we have to impeach him. So that's what I said. That'll end the war. That's the only thing that really will end the war. Otherwise, we're going to be going back and forth, blowing each other up, blowing each other up.
Okay.
How in the world?
All right, now.
Are you making friends?
Okay.
With Putin?
Okay, I said okay.
All right, man, go get me started.
No.
Man, oh, man.
Uh-uh.
Talk to you later, sir.
Okay. I take back something I said earlier about the majority of African Americans not being poor. Because some of us have poor judgment. So we do have a level of, we have poverty judgment. I don't know what it is about Bob that makes me want to go rob a liquor store. I don't know what he just, I just, my blood just, I don't know what it is. Okay. Oh, I have a little fan right here. I need to cool off. Okay, everybody, I'm going to take a break and come back and talk about, I don't. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Five Democratic candidates vying to become Wisconsin's next governor faced off in their one and only debate. It's not a debate. It's a forum. Well, it took place yesterday, exactly 2 weeks before Election Day, and on the same day in-person absentee voting began across the state. The debate came after a significant shakeup in the race when Sarah Rodriguez dropped out, prompting Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley to re-enter the contest. For those of you that believe David Crowley won last night's candidate forum, what is that based on? I'm serious. Is it based on the fact that you like him? That you want him to do well? What are you considering when you say that he won? Because I did a poll in the Hughes Views Facebook group. And last I checked, the majority of people said that David Crowley won the candidate forum. How? Because if I missed something, I mean, he didn't lose. But if the goal was for him to, now it depends on what poll you pay attention to, and I don't know which ones to pay attention to. The only polls that I find credible are the ones that I commission, and I haven't done one in a while. But he was somewhere between 5% and 7% when he dropped out of the race, maybe even a little bit lower than that. Did he perform in a way last night that would improve his poll numbers to better than 40%? Did he give answers? Did he give solutions? Did he make his case to where he could, via his performance last night, he could overtake the current front runner, Francesca Hong? Or, here's what I fear, we live in a participation trophy society, which I hate, some time ago, you know, back in the 20th century, if you got second place, you lost. You didn't win. You lost. If you're in the playoffs and you lost, you went home. You didn't get a trophy because you put your shoes on. I don't want us to have a low standard for black people. Like, you know, that scene in Nutty Professor where Eddie Murphy plays the mother, Hercules, just giving credit to her big, fat, big back son just because he's eating. We can't do that. We can't afford to have a low standard for African-Americans who are seeking powerful positions. They need to be held to the highest standard. Dare I say, we should hold them to a standard higher than we hold the Caucasians, because the Caucasians have an incredible blind spot when it comes to representing people of diversity. Now, they can do it if they outsource and if they hire other people. But I think that our standard needs to be high. And if you have a low standard for the black candidate because, you know, he grew up in a 5'3", 206 and he got evicted a lot, I think you are selling black people short. It irks me to no end when we have a lower standard for us than even they do. So if you believe that David Crowley won that candidate for him because your standard for him is low, just the fact that he was wearing a red tie and he was standing in the middle, some of y'all gonna crown him the winner. What about actual performance? What about actual merit? That needs to count for something, because I think if you hold us to that standard, African-Americans will exceed every single expectation. But if you hold black people, especially black children, to a low standard, especially a low academic standard, you know what's going to happen? They're never going to learn how to read. If you go into your profession of teaching thinking that these black children are mentally deficient and mentally void, it will come out in your instruction of them, and you will sell them short. And ultimately, they will be non-competitive in the global economic and financial markets. We have to start by holding one another to a higher standard. Mandela did not exceed that standard because he got unnecessarily petty. Challenge somebody on their policies, brother. Did you see that picture, Xavier, where they showed, it was a caption propped up by special interests and on a platform, and they showed David Crowley was standing on a platform. Did you see that picture?
No, but I heard about it.
I'm going to send it to you. Now, I don't know if that was Mandela's official campaign account, but it is run by someone who was close to him, and that's just absolutely disgusting. If you can't challenge somebody on the merit of their responses and their issues, you have no business running for office. And the good news is, after Mandela loses this one, he will go away. He will not run for statewide office ever again, because it will be proven and established that he can't win. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour two.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.